Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Chris Maxwell.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. So, Chris, thank you so much for coming on this episode, because I have such a specific thing I want to talk to you about and with you about. And there are only a handful of people who I imagine have the background that we could have this conversation. And I'm not one of them. So back in May of 2021, Chava and I recorded an episode that was titled The Birth and Death of the CRM. That would be, the body that at the time was the sole body that could certify mezcal. So Alberto Esteban Marino, the former director general of the NOMS for the Mexican government, he provided us with court papers that documented the end of the CRM's monopoly on certifying mezcal. And then just recently, Chris, Alberto comes back to me and he's got two court decisions documenting the end of the CRT's monopoly on certifying tequila.
Yeah.
Well, now you've just demonstrated a bias, haven't you? Haven't you, Chris?
No. I mean, monopolies are awesome. Monopolies are great.
Yeah, if you got nothing to do on a Sunday. So my question to you, Chris, is what does this mean?
I don't know. There's a lot of interesting aspects of what can happen within this, because, you know, the CRT has typically been controlled by a handful of producers who have been controlling the tequila industry for an extremely long period of time. And it's going to throw some chaos into the situation. And, it may allow for some other interesting aspects and especially within the norma, as to how things are going to go down. So I'm curious to see what unfolds.
Yeah. So Alberto's representing this group called, and I'm going to butcher this, and that's not going to surprise you, Certificación Mexicana, right? And so they've already been cleared as an inspecting body for years, right? But now they're seeking authority to certify as well. And, you know, and the NOM actually allows for that, but the CRT has been arguing that this is meant to be interpreted as other bodies can certify tequila, but only when the CRT no longer exists. That's been their argument in the first two cases, and they lost both of the first two cases. And I'm going to, for the webpage for this episode, I'm going to put those documents online. They're in Spanish, but, you know, hey, if you've got access to this thing called Google Translate, you should have no problem breaking them into English or whatever language you speak.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That'll be a good read.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Pour yourself something tasty. Do a little edumacation. Yeah.
There you go. I like that. So, you know, my great hope, right, is that the result of this is that it's easier for people in the other five states in which you can, and, you know, it's communities within the five states, but in those other, I'm sorry, the four states where you can make tequila, that they'll have an easier time certifying. And maybe this helps to mitigate this burgeoning monoculture of Blue Weber in Jalisco. That's one thing I hope comes out of this.
Well, I can tell you right now that none of the producers have any interest in changing up how they're approaching the agave. It is not in any of their interests. As long as they're getting sugar content, more traditional producers are having access to mature and sometimes ripe agave, cool. But when it comes down to probably like 75% of the agave that's being used in the industry, they do not care.
75%? God, I would have actually, it's funny. I was about to flag you. I thought, I should let you finish what you were saying. I was going to flag you as being cynical, but I would actually say 95% of the agave being used, they don't care. But I think that's also, right? But, I also look at what did tequila look like 15 years ago, right? What year is this? Yeah. Before Mezcal started really taking its place in the world of agave spirits, and trying to find any tequila producer back in, let's say, 2008, find any tequila producer who was doing things, even elements of things, in a relatively pre-industrial manner, that would have been tough, wouldn't it?
Well, no. I mean, pre-industrial, are we talking pre-industrial of like 1895, or are we talking pre-industrial of 1955, right? So are we talking about like, okay, the use of steam, is that industrialization of the tequila industry, or is inclusion of cooking with steam in a stainless steel oven the industrialization? Right? Are we talking about using roller mills versus a Tohono as industrialization, even though roller mills have been around for hundreds of years?
Yeah.
Right? So those conversations are deep. And if we're talking about like what was really happening at that point in time, because I was already touring tequila distilleries throughout Jalisco in 2000, my first time in 2007, 2008, I can tell you right off the board, there were three distilleries that were using a Tohono on a consistent basis. Actually, technically at that point in time, there was four. 100% of everything that was coming out of La Fortaleza was Tohono, small, extremely small batch. I think, at that point in time, Guillermo was producing probably 4 to 8 weeks a year.
Yeah.
And then, La Oteña had a Tohono and actually didn't even have electricity in their distillery until 99 or 2001. And that's when they got their first roller mill. And then, of course, there's Siete Leguas, whose original distillery was, everything's Tohono based. And then their second distillery is roller mill. And then you have Pernod Ricard, who has a Tohono that they were using to produce Tezon at that point in time.
That was 100%. But when I'm looking at the trajectory of where tequila is headed, like one of those guys that you mentioned, again, like I don't know a lot about tequila, right? But the second guys you mentioned, La Oteña, was that it?
Yeah. Carlos Camarena.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they had added electricity as sort of a means, I'm guessing, to ramp up production. And when I look at what's happened recently, like my head and again, tequila is not my world, but I look at the Rosales family at Cascaween and how, as a result of their connections to David Suro, suddenly they're cooking agave underground in a stone-lined earthen oven. They're milling it by hand. They're fermenting open air in wooden barrels. They're distilling in wood fires. I think it's wood fire stills. Wouldn't swear to that. But no, doing things. Sorry, go ahead.
It's steam stilled or steam heated stills.
Yeah. Okay, but other than that, I mean, you're literally using technology that goes back to certainly before the 1893 World's Fair, and so what's my point? My point is, I think the growth of mezcal as an expression has sort of shown some tequila producers, hey, wait, there's a market for this other thing that's more traditional. And I'm wondering if maybe, The thing I love about corporations, Chris, is they just want our money. And if we show them a way that we will give them our money, they'll find a way to produce that thing. And my great hope is maybe through these alternative certification processes, somebody realizes, I just had a call this week with a friend of mine. I'm not going to name names because I don't know that he wants me to. But he was saying that there are a couple of tequila producers in Jalisco who have been growing agave from seed. And it's, as he put it, it is angering the CRT because they look at the Blue Weber that's coming from these germinated seeds and it doesn't look like what they think it is. And they're forcing them to take all this genetic testing, right? So let's apply that to a future. And I think the future is literally just a few weeks away where we have two certifying bodies. And I think pretty soon after that, if I'm understanding my other friends correctly, there will be a third certifying body. And, if these certifying bodies don't have the same issues that the CRT has in that, well, I look at this and it doesn't look like Blue Weber, suddenly makes it a lot easier to create a product that is from seed. And as we're talking about something that I think is as unnecessary as tequila that's additive free, when I think about what's really going to have an impact, it's tequila from plants that aren't homogenous genetically. Like that to me is a whole nother kind of marketing campaign that I think would give somebody in some other state a reason to do something different. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, been looking forward for that type of thing. I was reading Annabelle Azuela's book that she co-authored with Gary Newman, not Newman.
Nobhan.
That goes into that. And that book was written in like the late 90s. And it talked about the importance of that. And like that was one of the first books that I delved into. And that was a conversation that I was bringing up before David Suro made it an important conversation piece. And yes, I think it's going to be awesome if there are going to be some of these other certifiers who are going to be like willing to work with somebody who is making, let's say like 1,000 liters a month, right? Mm-hmm. 250 mm-hmm. liters a week to be able to do some of this, very traditional production, because typically the tequila industry, it's big money. It takes, as Guillermo Sousa has found out, it takes a lot of money to be able to, to do this and, to have your own distillery, and to be able to do everything, to have the employees, it takes a lot of money. It takes even a lot of money to like bring a brand to market and to be able to market it properly, right? So,
and compete against these corporations with millions and millions of dollars, sure.
Yep. Yeah. But I also know that, in paying the CRT every month, it's still a pretty penny. And if you are not in production, you still have to certify the CRT. You have to still have to pay the CRT every month for them to come by. And I believe that for you to retain your CRT status, you have to produce a minimum of 600 liters a year.
Minimum of 600 liters a year?
Yep.
That's not
so bad. If you're not, if you're not in, that's when we're used to like some of these mezcal producers who are doing 50 liters a week, like 600 liters is tiny. It's something small like that. So basically like a really quick run, but you still have to have them come by and like look every month just to make sure that you're actually not in production. So you have to pay them for that. Yeah. Then you have to pay them, then there's a tax upon how many liters you're actually producing. So it's expensive. For sure. Yeah. And if somebody can come by and make it not expensive, cool. I'm down.
And I can have our own brand, Chris. The dream we've always had. Okay, I've never had that dream. Have you had that dream?
I had that dream. No. I will never. No. I know too much.
I don't even really want my own podcast. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things
too bad,
that...
so sad. Too late now.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that comes to mind, and I think I even said this in the episode when we were talking about the other body certifying mezcal, one of the things that comes to my mind and that concerns me is, while I'm not a fan of monopolies and I'm not a fan of the way that they can control the people who are forced to come to them, I also recognize that you've got this written document, the NOM, that defines what tequila is, right? And then you've got this one body that interprets it, which, you know, if you apply that to the way that governments work, then I guess like that makes the CRT the Supreme Court. And yep. Suddenly you open this up to all these other bodies to interpret that single document, and there's no one body over all of it. I'm concerned that there might be some different interpretations that makes tequila more confusing to the average consumer.
It could. I think that the aspect of like tequila 100% agave has dumbed down the entire conversation for most.
Has it though?
It has. It really has. Especially
when you say
dumbed
it down, you mean takes out the nuance that.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like, yeah. You know, okay, it's 100% agave. It's tequila. It's in a fancy bottle, and you know, celebrity Joe Schmo is, you know, pimping his juice. Nobody cares about the quality of it. It looks pretty. You know, it's got a famous name behind it. Nobody's really cares about the contents inside it, how it's being sourced, you know, or anything like that, right? And I think that's what I'm saying. It's been dumbed down to like tequila, 100% agave. Okay, cool. Then I can drink it and not get a hangover. That's all, you know, people are thinking about these days.
Well, sorry, you're still going to get the hangover. You're drinking enough. But yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah,
but you know, but I put this question to Alberto. Let me just I want to run his response.
Okay.
La diferencia de criterios se puede presentar.
The difference in interpretation can occur not only between two certification bodies, but also between inspectors inside one of the certification bodies. So the issue with having different interpretations as a result of different certification bodies is false. The truth is that in order to deal with different interpreters, the authority, who is the General Directorate of Standards, has protocols to ensure that the two certification mechanisms guarantee compliance with the standard. There may be different ways of checking compliance, but in both cases, there must be assurance of compliance. A very clear example is the way to prove that a plantation is within the zone of the denomination of origin is through satellite geolocation with a cell phone. One certifier could say, I stood at this point so many degrees latitude north, south, etc., and took a reference photo and can see that this is within the correct zone. The other could say that their way is not with a phone, but with a military-grade GPS. They both lead you to the same result, that the plantation is inside the denomination of origin, though they use different devices. One may say, hey, I did a physical inspection, and the other says, I took pictures with a drone. These are two ways of making sure that there was a plantation, and that's where the agave came from. In other words, there are two ways of doing the same thing, but both cases lead to the same result, to make sure that you are enforcing the regulations. So the authority, which is the General Directorate of Standards, has to make sure that they demonstrate that they are complying with the standard, even if it is using different tools. So, you know, so that's Alberto's interpretation, and I get it. And I still don't know that I buy into that. But I also recognize that, to me at least, the biggest issue here is Can we find, can this be a way, can this be a path away from the monoculture issues and the genetic homogeneity issues? Homogeneous, I don't even know what word that is,
but
the homogeneous genetics issues that that Jalisco is facing right now. And if it is, hey, I'm all in support of this.
Yeah, I think not. That can't happen until, you know, people such as, you know, Carlos and Felipe Camarena and Guillermo Sauza and Chava and
Rosales.
Rosales and Juan Fernando Gonzalez over at Sitzleguas, and anybody else who's going to be in that conversation can actually hit the eject button themselves and form a more traditional artisanal group and, you know, live up to the norma from 1949. And,
Hang on a second. This is fascinating to me. So the norma from 1949, obviously there are a bunch of differences, but how does it, or does it, I guess, specifically relate to the monoculture issue?
Well, in the norma from 1949 allowed for tequila to be produced from any agave that was cultivated in the state of Jalisco.
In 1949.
Yep. There was an emphasis on using what we know as the Tecolano Huebra Azul. They did give it a different name from that, they were using multiple different agaves, and I've seen even pictures from the Sauza distillery in the early 60s where there were other agaves being used. And, so it was definitely a thing, during that time period. The other aspect is how much deforestation that had happened in Jalisco since 1949, which is, kind of sad to acknowledge. But so there were multiple agaves that were being used. And, even during that time period, they recognized that, if you took the ahuelo from the blue agave, mm-hmm. you were able to cultivate it and harvest it faster than any other agave. Had a higher sugar content. It's got a lower fat content, and which makes it easier to distill with. And the actual harvesting of the agave is faster than others. So at the end of the day, when the tequila industry is a business and every business is trying to get from point A to point B as fast as possible with the highest profit margin as possible, they recognize that this agave, using the ahuelos and not going from seed, was going to allow them to do that. So no one in the tequila industry has, I shouldn't say no one, the majority of producers and agaveros in the tequila industry have zero interest in going from seed, especially an agavero who's going to sit there and be like, oh, you want me to wait 12 years now to go through two cycles of a boom and a bust when right. I could be planting this seed now and the agave is getting, let's just say, 10 pesos a kilo, and 5 years from now, it's going to get 30 pesos a kilo, and like, that agave is going to be far from being ready to be harvested. And then by the time it's ready to be mature and ready for harvest, it's back down to 3 pesos.
Yeah. I hear that, but
it's from a business standpoint, it's going to be really super hard to get the agaveros who control most of the agave used in the tequila industry to go from seed.
Yeah, no. I totally get that. And I agree. I shouldn't say always.
The one thing that I would love to see, though, that could get everybody on board on this entire thing is once, and I'm pretty sure this is a side topic, but I think it's kind of important to kind of throw the idea out there. I know that cannabis is legal. So what if we intercrop?
What?
So, yeah, I believe cannabis is legal in Mexico. What if we intercrop?
Okay, yeah.
What if we intercrop with cannabis. So you spread the agave out, because right now the agave are planted closer and closer together, okay? Spread them out apart, and then in between the rows, you've got rows of cannabis. So you're going to be putting other nutrients back into the soil content. It's going to also infuse a little bit more of an herbaceous character into the distillate. And you're going to receive the two most expensive crops available, and you are just making money on a consistent basis.
Well, I love that idea for so many reasons. I love that idea, if for nothing else, because I know the Dark Matter Coffee guys will go down to Jalisco with me then. But, you know, I think that there's something. Yeah. They're fun guys. But, I think there's also something to be said for if we were having this conversation 40 years ago, we would have said the same thing about organics. Nobody's going to pay extra for organics. And I think the way that markets move is consumers make demands and eventually somebody fulfills that demand. And then more of these companies move toward that model because they see that there can be a premium charged. And my great hope is that's what we see. I mean, right now we've got a bottled, you correct me on this, but I think at least one of, if not the most expensive standard bottle of tequila in the marketplace is made by a diffuser. And the additives are added to it, and they charge a couple hundred dollars a bottle based on this beautiful bottle and the beautiful packaging. But you back it up, and then you see this other movement about buying tequila that does not have additives. And I think that shows that you can have two completely differing markets at once, building in completely different directions.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we'll ever shut down all of the monoculture issues in tequila, but I am saying if we can just supplement it with some biodiversity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And trust me, I'm 100% down. But the hard part is to be able to confirm that this agave in this bottle came from seed. That's going to be the hard part. Until we can get everybody on board to do that, it's going to be hard. And just like, a couple of years ago, everybody's like, oh yeah, we use mature agave. And like, dude, like so few of you are using mature agave and I can taste it on my palate.
Yeah. Well, we just have to get Grover and Scarlett on the case. You know, it's funny. I find most certifying bodies to be corruptible, but Grover and Scarlett sure don't seem to be. God bless them. Yeah. Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to add to this conversation?
We were kind of chatting a little bit previously, you had said that Cuervo, who owns a couple of mezcal brands, right, that they use one of the mezcal certifiers who's based in Michoacán to certify the mezcal that they are bottling in Guadalajara. And so within that, because I know that the CRT tried to slap them with fines for having distillates at their distilleries that they're not supposed to have and doing other sorts of things, that they got into their panties got all bunched up and they actually threatened to leave the CRT. And
Whose panties are we talking about? Are we talking Jose Cuervo's or the CRT's panties?
Cuervo's.
Both Cuervo's, okay.
Cuervo's.
Because I think I have a pair of Cuervo panties. Anyway, keep going.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are they black with gold and sequins and lace?
You betcha.
Nice. So it wouldn't surprise me if they were the ones that were actually pushing to do this, even though they pretty much control the CRT. It's kind of like Donald Trump, if anybody talks bad about them, they're like the worst people ever, right? So it's like, do not work against me. So Cuervo's like finding that the CRT is working against them, even though they're doing stuff they're not supposed to be doing. So they're like, okay, fine, you know, we're going to take our ball and go home. And so, you know, then they're like, oh, well, like, we know, we understand how this is supposed to work. And what if we got you, who's certifying our mezcal, to certify tequila too? Then we can have like all control over everything and we don't need the CRT. So I could definitely see where it's being instigated by Cuervo, especially since they have the financial funds to be able to do this type of thing. So that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they are Darth Vader of the tequila industry, even though Darth Vader is a pretty badass motherfucker. But, you know, they are the evil of the industry, the evil empire.
Didn't he just lose his way? Couldn't he have potentially been good? Wasn't there a story at the end where he became the hero?
I think so.
I don't know. I don't watch that Star Wars stuff. Yeah. Anyway. Well, I guess what it all comes down to is, A, we have to see, like, does this actually happen? And I think we're a week or two away from the final judgment from the 9th District Court in Mexico City. And then how it plays out.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Yeah, so am I. I think this will be an interesting conversation and interesting storyline to the entire tequila industry. I don't think anybody but a few of us, like, deep geeks are going to, like, really care, but I think it'll be interesting.
Right on.
For sure.
Well, thank you very much for joining me on this episode, Chris, and I'll catch you next time.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, drive responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity. And consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.